Dr. Carl-Henric Robert is our guest on the Paula Gordon Show. Bill Russell and I are with him at the Carter Center in Atlanta, where there is a gathering of people exploring the natural step internationally. And you now have an international organization, but you keep making us do the basic work to go back to first principles, mm-hmm. to go back to fundamentals of how one begins to deal with an enormously complex mm-hmm. challenge to everyone on the planet, to everything on the planet. As Bill was asking, give us the short course on what are these basic principles. Mm-hmm. I know what I would say, but I am much more interested to know how you would frame them.
Do you want
them.
To do it in a journalistic way? To talk about the technical principles of the framework for decision making up front, and then talk about how they were elaborated, or would you like to have it in a logistic way, because there were some social principles that preceded the elaboration of...
That sounds more like a story to me.
Okay, I will then bring you the story. The story was that I entered my own brain and asked myself, how is it that I work when I do my projects? And the conclusion is the same as for all other scientists and all other people, by the way, that you go for the principles first. You organize a jigsaw puzzle with the principles for jigsaw puzzles, which means to go for the edge pieces, the colors and stuff. And in that way, you can organize complexity. All games are like that. You can't play chess if you don't know the principles of how to move the players on the play field, and if you don't know the principles that define victory, which are the principles of checkmate. So I realized that what we need is, first of all, the principles of success and the principles of the moves, and I must ask advice around me because nobody knows about these things.
So it is inherently a collective social effort.
It is. And a number of people were just going in the same car to their jobs to use less energy. They felt intuitively that this is better than if everyone sits in their own car. And we were filtering away toxins that were already demonstrated as harmful in nature. And we did a lot of things. But the principle that underpinned everything we did were still not on the table. So there were side effects for whatever we did. If we picked another chemical, you could bet on that it consumed more energy in its production or whatever. There were a number of trade-offs, and we were all confused.
But those were all symptoms, weren't they?
They were just tackling symptoms. They were prescribing aspirin for everything. They were filtering something away, and then it started to leak elsewhere, and we were just shoveling the problems around because the principles of success were not there. We were playing chess without knowing what we were doing. So I realized I need scientists to talk on the principle level. But scientists are paid to fight about details because all their programs are far out in the interrelationships of knowledge where they are located. So I had to convince them to help me to look upstream to much more robust principle levels, though they are paid to be elsewhere. So I needed social principles first, and I immediately just went to myself again. I'm a very hot-tempered person, and if somebody tells me what to do, I don't like it, and so forth. So a lot of scientists are like that. And then I
a lot of people are like that. They don't want to be told what to do.
But also scientists. So I then developed the yes-and technique, which means that whatever you hear, even if it is fighting against you, you absorb it, because some of it is probably relevant. So you absorb all the relevant aspects in what you get against you. And then you add, and then you expand the picture.
Just and.
Yes, and yes. So it's yes and. Mm-hmm. So yes and only stands for the sequence by which you respond. If you say no, the person you are talking to don't listen anymore. He's just waiting for his opportunity to speak to justify what he said before. If you say yes, but, it means no. But everybody knows that. But if you say yes, and not only that, and you add a few things, and then you said, and therefore, and then you add your stuff, you are listened to. That was one of the things.
That's powerfully affirmative.
Yeah.
And it's not by accident you say yes.
And you see, I am a very hot-tempered person. I'm not a natural in this at all. I had to very rigorously control myself doing this because I thought that the goal was more important than myself. And so I developed techniques to deal with difficult people like myself to make this happen. And it worked beautifully.
It's important to know the enemy.
But not always. And after a while, you don't feel like you are manipulating people either, because a few experiences come from this. One is that if you, instead of telling people what to do, ask them advice in this humble way and say yes and ask them advice in the same time, first of all, aggression goes down. Secondly, you always get a piece of advice. Thirdly,
you can count on that.
You can count on that. Because if you say, could you please advise me on this? The answer, no, simply doesn't happen. You know, it's simply not human. And the third is that the piece of advice you get is generally very good, surprisingly good, even from people who behave as if they are against you. Even if you can't follow the advice right off, it certainly tells you what was wrong with your communication. You were evidently perceived in the wrong way or whatever. And then you have a friend on the wagon instead of an enemy. So it's a very, very elegant technique. And I worked it out to deal with people like myself. And eventually I succeeded to get help from my scientific peers to look upstream and identify those principles.
And upstream is a fundamental.
That is very true. If you are going to handle problems in a very complex system, you must go to the root causes. You cannot be downstream at the effect levels, because something may be fundamentally wrong far before the area you are looking at.
Which gets you stuck in symptoms.
Yeah, and then you get stuck in symptoms. So you have to go to the root causes. And since I didn't have this, I needed the social stuff to get all the scientists to help me. And together we elaborated it. And then we went to business people and said, this is the best we've been able to do. Is this relevant for decision making? And they said, could be, but not in this format. And then a new dialogue started with all the scientists and the business people. And this is what the dialogue process is about. And so the technical principles that we came up with and the model for decision making is just what we have today. It will probably be even more refined. I was scared at first that it would be diluted by a number of compromises. It's the opposite way around. Since we are looking upstream all the time, it has become more and more robust, more and more strict. And I love that, because it is like a crystal now, and it will probably be even more polished. But
headed
but
for diamond,
useful.
Headed for diamond.
Yeah. Yeah.
Except it's not that rigid. That's
yeah. No, it's not rigid. It's trunk and branches rather than a frame. A frame is something that frames you in. But this is a structure, basic structure, on which you can put on any amount of twigs and leaves. And that is the beauty of it. It doesn't lock people in. So we just present the model, and when they see, yes, this is beautiful, yes, this is rational, this is really good, and then they start to play, and that is when the fun part starts, when individual creative minds are operating on this, because we all want to know the rules before we start to play a game, and when we get the rules, we can find the beauty of it. It's the same in music, it's the same in family games, sports, always the same.
This may be a bad analogy because it's too technical. We just did a program on the subject of codes and Fermat's Last Theorem.
Both coming out of mathematics.
Mathematics. And what you're describing sounds remarkably like creating the theorems in mathematics and then using those core theorems as the basis for proving, demonstrating.
Exactly.
A rich set and virtually infinite set of solutions and approaches.
Exactly.
Which is remarkable.
That's it.
And you're doing that, and this is even stranger. You're doing that with human, you know, what is essentially human systems, mm-hmm. which are probably the most complicated that we certainly know anything about.
That's true. And when you use those, how did you express them? Theorems.
Theorems.
I just couldn't pronounce it in an English way. But when you do so, it must be in a hierarchical way, so that the next move builds on the first one.
Hierarchical.
Yes. Sorry.
Just wanted to make sure I understood
yes,
you.
Yes, but that's what I meant. So that it all builds on each other, and that you don't have overlaps, and that you don't have that you don't forget essential aspects.
That's structurally sound, isn't it?
Yes, and that's how the individual brain always operates, wants it to be. So the trick is not to teach people anything. We were born to think that way, but the problem is to make groups operate as smart as the individual brain so that we can become one big brain together. And that is also the beauty of it, because it's so much more fun for community building, for the social aspects of it, if a team have a shared mental model of something that is strict and beautiful to consider before you start playing the game.
And ultimately, you're talking about a social system. I mean, none of this is going to happen if it doesn't become part of how people live and how they behave in their day-to-day lives.
That's true.
Okay, what are the theorems?
Short course.
Yes, very short. First of all, the overall problem of non-sustainability is that we are running out of life-sustaining resources. The life-sustaining productivity of resources is declining. More pesticides and fertilizers for the same harvest, and larger fish boats for the same catch. That is the the global problem in the same time as pollutants are increasing in concentration, greenhouse gases are increasing in the same time as we get more and more people. So per capita, it is like we are going further, deeper and deeper into a funnel of declining life and economy sustaining capacity of the ecosystems. That is the ecological dimension of non-sustainability. Now, sustainable principles for sustainability should then be elaborated as such. It is us that is the problem, that are the problem. So we must then ask ourselves, by what principle mechanisms are we destroying this system, creating the funnel, and then put a knot in each of those. And there are only three fundamental ways of destroying the system. One is to have a steady input of elements from outside of the biosphere, which is the Earth's crust in this case, since we don't mine from planets yet, but that is the input that we create. And if we want to destroy the system fast by allowing concentrations go up very fast, like ink in an aquarium, it would be to go for scarce elements and use them in a wasteful way, things like mercury and lead and cadmium, because then concentrations of that would go up. So that's one of the problems, and we do that. Number two, we could put elements together into compounds. Even if we don't pick them from the Earth's crust, we could get some chlorine here and some fluorine there and some carbon there and make CFC, for instance, in a way that cannot be assimilated by Mother Nature. And since nothing disappears, if we use such compounds in a wasteful way, they start to increase in concentration too. We can also allow nature-like compounds, of course, to increase. If we emit them in huge amounts, Mother Nature cannot assimilate them in time. So that's a second possibility, to pollute this system with higher and higher concentrations of man-made compounds. And then that leaves us with only one more possibility to destroy it ecologically. And that is to systematically destroy Mother Nature by physical means, manually, with our tools. We could put asphalt on it. We could dig in the ground so that we destroy groundwater flows. We could have too heavy machinery in agriculture so that we compress the soil and cause micro-erosion. There are a number of such physical ways. But if we do neither of those three, it is ecologically sustainable. But it can't happen unless people are happy too. So the fourth principle says that we must meet human needs within the framework set by the first three. So the first principle is the following. In the sustainable society, nature is not subject to systematically increasing concentrations of substances extracted from the Earth's crust, or concentrations of substances that we produce ourselves, or degradation by physical means.
One, two, and three.
That's one, two, and three. And in that society, human needs are met worldwide.
We're going to come back in just a minute and pick up more or less exactly there with Dr. Carl-Henric Robert. Bill Russell and I invite you to be with us when we return.